Are you looking for a podcast that your whole family can enjoy that asks the deep philosophical questions like, do trees fart?
If you are, then you'll love Tumble, a science podcast for kids. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Join us as we explore stories of science discovery, from butts to animals, dinosaurs, astronomy, and everything in between.
You'll love these stories, and you'll learn something new.
Find and follow Tumble Science Podcast for Kids wherever you get your podcasts, or at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
Soundsington Media!
Hey, Brian, think for a second of all the teachers you've had throughout your entire life.
Okay.
Who was your favorite?
That's a tough one. I think I'd say Annette Masson because I really use a lot of the stuff she taught me still to this day.
You're using some of the things she taught you right now, right?
That's right. She was our voice teacher in college.
I think that my favorite was Mr. Holaba. He was my English teacher in high school. He was just really good.
So what's got you thinking about teachers?
Well, throughout the season, our amazing guests have talked about the importance of staying curious, along with the value of having great teachers and mentors. Space helps us dream, and teachers and mentors pave the way for us to make our dreams a reality.
You're right. Space is full of limitless possibilities.
Think of what's out there. Did you know that there are likely at least 150 billion stars in the Milky Way galaxy?
Yeah, and think of where we're going. Like, did you know that NASA will land the first woman and next man on the moon by 2024?
I'm Meredith Stepien.
And I'm Brian Holden. And this is Reach, a space podcast for kids. Welcome to Reach, a space podcast for kids. You know, Meredith, we talk a lot about the importance of learning about space and astronomy, but it's always important to kick back and have some fun too, you know?
You mean like tell space jokes?
I mean tell space jokes.
Do you know any space jokes, Brian?
I don't. That's embarrassing. But you know what? It's good, because I thought we could ask our listeners if they had any good ones to share.
Great idea. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is James from Golden Valley, and here is my joke. What is an astronaut's favorite button on a keyboard? The space bar.
Hi, my name is Blythe, and my joke is, what do you call a crazy moon? A lunatic.
Hi, my name is Isabella, and this is my joke. How do you arrange a space party? You plan it.
What is an astronaut's favorite music? Neptunes.
Those were great. Hey, Brian, totally unrelated question. Is that okay?
Yes.
How do you know when the moon's had enough to eat?
I don't know. How do you know when the moon's had enough to eat?
When it's full.
Okay. So speaking of the moon...
This week on Reach, we hit the galactic jackpot in our search to learn from experts about exploring space. We sat down with NASA astronaut Matthew Dominick, who's based out of NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, Texas.
We're huge fans of Matthew's, and he's full of incredible stories about what an astronaut's life is like behind the scenes. We talked about astronaut training, what it's like to plan a moon landing, and the importance of teachers and mentors in your life. Oh, and turtles.
Turtles?
Turtles. Today, we're honored to have NASA astronaut and U.S. Navy commander Matthew Dominick on the podcast. Matthew, I think our listeners are going to be very excited to hear from you. So could you just start off by telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
My name is Matthew Dominick. You covered that already. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I'm a NASA astronaut, like you said. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a human that lives on Earth. I love this place, and I want to see it go further.
So we've got a lot of questions that we want to ask you, so let's just dive right in. You were selected in June 2017 to join NASA Astronaut Group 22. Can you tell us about this specific group? What does it mean to be part of Group 22?
It's a real privilege. It's an honor. It's really exciting because you get to work with people that are incredible. And I don't think it really matters what you do in life. It's about working with really incredible people. that makes your day when you show up to work and in the conversations you get to have with them. And so this is a group of people from, you know, all over the United States. We have two members from Canada. We have PhDs, we have scientists, we have engineers, we have military folks from different backgrounds. We have a Navy SEAL, we have a submariner, we have aviators, and we have geologists, we have combustion scientists, we have biologists. Like, it just, you can, it's really cool. It's like, I can walk around with this group of people and it's like a roving Wikipedia. You know, I can go look up something on Wikipedia, or I could just ask this really cool group of people I get to work with every day.
your own personal in-person Wikipedia.
Yeah, it's very interactive. It's incredible. Sometimes Wikipedia has really complicated answers, and these folks can explain it in incredible ways that I can understand.
That's amazing. So how many people are in the 22nd group here at NASA?
We have 11 NASA astronauts, and we have 2 Canadian astronauts.
Wow, that's amazing. And I heard that you all have a special nickname for yourselves. Can you tell me the story behind that?
Absolutely. So I'll set the stage a little bit. The name is the Turtles, but it starts with, you know, we're all over the planet, really, and we get the phone call that say, hey, you're going to be an astronaut. And we get invited, and they said, hey, just tell your friends, your closest friends, and maybe your family, but we really don't want the world to know that you have this job yet. Don't put it on social media. Don't post it. Don't tell everybody. It's a secret. And then we're going to fly you from all over the world. I was in Tokyo, other folks in the United States. We had folks, you know, all over the planet, and they come to Houston. And so I flew 14 hours to get here. And then we lived in kind of secret for 2 days as we went through training real quick. So they taught us how to say certain things. We got the blue flight suit. We got all of the parts and pieces put together, crammed into our brain in 2 days. And then the vice president of the United States shows up to announce the class. Like, this is like, I went from doing my job in the military, you know, quietly and just working hard every day. And not that we don't work hard here, but now it's this very public thing. And the vice president walks out and announces the class. And he gives his speech, and he nailed it right on the head. He said something that was really, he just nailed it. And he said, hey, if you're ever in a field and you see a turtle on top of a fence post, you know that that turtle didn't get there by itself. And what he was telling us was that, you know, all of our backgrounds are impressive if you look at our resumes. But really, the true story behind us is all of our mentors, our teachers, the folks that enabled us to learn and to see things that we would have never seen before. All of the people, family, friends, teachers that got us to where we are today are the real heroes of today. And so the turtle didn't climb the fence post. Somebody helped him get there. So there we were as a class up on this fence post. And as a result, the class that's most senior to your class, astronaut class, so astronaut group 21 in this case, gets the privilege of naming you. And mm-hmm. So they contacted the vice president, and he said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And so he made a little video announcing our class as the Turtles. And that happened about a year later after that speech, but that was the impetus.
That is so cool. I love that, like, your group is so inspired by teamwork. We've talked about that a lot on the podcast, how sending people to space, sending spacecraft to space, it involves so much teamwork, and I love that you're embracing that. I want to talk to you, because you keep using the word class, you know, what's it like to be kind of in class and training with people? I mean, you must really get to know these people pretty well, huh?
Absolutely. You have to get to know them really well. If you could imagine crawling into your SUV, right, or your small SUV, roughly the size, and that you know, maybe commute in to go to work or go to school. But imagine not getting out of it. Imagine staying in that SUV for 30 days. Mm. And every, you know, all of your food is in there, your water, everything you need to survive, where you go to the bathroom, all the computers that run your mission, you're a long ways from home, and you can't roll down the windows because there's the vacuum of space outside. There's no air. And so you and 3 of your other best friends are in this SUV, and you don't get to get out for 30 days. And it launches on a rocket, and it goes into space, and it goes, maybe we're getting ready to go to the moon, so it goes to the moon, and then it comes back, and then it goes through the atmosphere at Mach 35, which is insanely fast, and then it has parachutes, so now it's kind of like a parachuter. So it's been a spaceship, it's parachuting, and now it's a boat because it lands in the water. And you're living in this thing, and you can imagine living in those close quarters with people. You don't really get to escape them. So you really want good, solid teammates. And then you're doing stuff that's incredibly dangerous, that there's very little tolerance for failure or error. So you train hard, you work hard for years and years to get ready for that one moment. And these are incredible people that you get to work with, the people that train you, the instructors, the engineers that build it, that you interact with on a regular basis, to understand how that works. So it's really all about teamwork and going to class and learning all these things and studying all these things so that you can do your best, because you owe it to humanity, right?
Yeah, I never thought about that. The pressure of having the world watch what you're doing, watch your work. How do you deal with that pressure?
You just study harder. Now, you do need to take breaks. We're human. You do need to relax a little bit because that helps you, but you just feel really driven to do the right thing.
That's amazing. Have you always wanted to be an astronaut, Matthew?
I would say yes, but didn't know it. And I would say that because I've always wanted to explore, and it started with exploring in my backyard, right? Turning over leaves in the backyard, or maybe digging a hole, or looking up in trees. And then, you know, probably against my mom's wishes, climbing over the fence and exploring the neighborhood and just trying to understand the world around me. And so I would say I've always wanted to explore and to go further and farther and know more to help to increase human knowledge. And, you know, astronaut is kind of a good way to do that, too.
That's so cool. So you're talking about this sort of spirit of exploration, this interest in exploration. And I'm curious about what the first thing you do when you want to become an astronaut is. Like, you talked about everyone having all these different backgrounds, so it sounds like you can sort of excel in many different fields of study. What's the first thing you do when you become an astronaut?
The first thing they really do is they just put you all together. They put all these people together from different backgrounds, and you start working together. It doesn't really matter exactly what the task is, but you start melding your minds and bringing your backgrounds together, right? I'm an aviator for the Navy. I'm a test pilot. I work with engineers. I have a niche background with a broad set of skills, but we bring in, you know, a combustion scientist, a biologist, a geologist. Like, one of my classmates helped make the decisions about where to drive rovers on Mars. She's a geologist. She's a planetary geologist. Mm-hmm. And we start working together, and we start, you know, we're learners, we're forever learners, but we're also teachers to each other, right? I kind of joked about, you know, this walking band of Wikipedia, but that's really what it is. We talked before about the SUV. Like, that vehicle has to do everything. It has to get power from the sun with a solar panel, right? It has to heat water so you can heat your food. Like, it has to do everything you do on Earth in something the size of an SUV. And if it breaks, there's no plumber, there's no mechanic. That's you. You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And you got to go back on your knowledge, and maybe you can kind of phone a friend. You can phone Earth, and I think there's a lot of helpful people on Earth that are going to help you figure it out. You know, for the three or four people in the spaceship, there's hundreds of people on Earth. And I remember watching my first spacewalk here from Johnson Space Center. And the spacewalk is two people in spacesuits that go outside the International Space Station. And there's a person on the inside that helps them suit up. So there's three people in space working on this. But on the ground, there's the person that tells them the procedures, reads them up over the radio. Then there's a room. That person sits in a room with maybe 20 people. But for every person in that room, there's what we call a back room, another room in the building that has a whole room of people supporting that person who's in that front room with even more detailed information. They have all of the tools laid out that they're going to use for that day. So if they have an issue, they can recreate the issue on Earth. There are hundreds of people on the Earth supporting those two people doing a spacewalk. And really what they're doing is fixing something. They went outside their house and they're going to fix it. They're going to go fix the roof. They're going to fix the solar panels. They're going to go fix a box. Maybe they could go to the electrical panel and throw the circuit breaker. All of these things that you do in your house, you have to do in space, but you have hundreds of people helping you. It's really a team effort.
It's so inspiring, too. And it's got to feel great being the astronaut, being someone who is, you know, on the receiving end of all that support of those hundreds of people. That's got to be a good feeling. It's got to give you a lot of confidence.
It gives you, it's not hard to get motivated, but there is an immense sense of responsibility to give back. I think our audience here can do this. We can do division. I think you do division in life. Like, there's one divisor. I think it's my equation for life. And on the top is of that divisor, the division is everything you're going to give to the world in the course of your life. And on the bottom is everything you take. And so when you're from birth to 18 years old, typically your parents are giving so much. They're putting a number in the bottom of that denominator, making it really big. You're going to college and people are giving you so much. But in the end, I think you want to give more to the world than you've taken. So you want the number in the top to be bigger. And if the number in the top is bigger than the number in the bottom, it's greater than one. So I think if every one of us works together to make that equation in life, our personal equation in life, greater than one, we're going to go very far places as a species, as humans.
Make your personal equation greater than one. Personal contribution. Yeah, that's a good t-shirt line if I could remember it correctly. Let me, Matthew, let me jump back to the training process a little bit. You talked about being in the training process and being kind of in class with your 10 other astronauts and or 10 other NASA astronauts, two other Canadian astronauts. So, like, how is the training process structured? Do you have, like, classes during the day, or does everyone have a specific thing that they're studying and you're trying to pick up stuff from each other? How does that work?
Oh, man, it is a machine. It is so complicated and so awesome. I mean, first, there's a huge group of people that just support the training aspect. And they, you know, there's a group of folks that just manage when you're going to be where and what you're going to do. Because we train, we talked a little bit before about being an operator. And so we fly a jet. It's a training jet that the Air Force has used for many decades. Its beauty is in that it's not great. It's great. It's a great trainer, but it's got a lot of failure modes. So you have to train in that. So there's a trainer for that. We work together. We learn to speak Russian because this is very much an international, you know, effort. We have Canadians, Americans, Europeans, Japanese partners, like really in Russia. And they, our agreement is that everybody on the space station speaks Russian and English. So I learn Russian. We learn about robotics, how we have this little cool arm. And if you are at home and you want to go look it up, I would go look up Canada Arm 2. It's something really cool to check out. Check out the pictures online of Canada Arm 2. It kind of inchworms around the space station and it grabs things and it grabs astronauts and moves them around. It grabs hardware. It grabs cargo. So we have to learn about that. And we learn about how to do spacewalks like we talked about before. And we learn about our spaceship, right? The International Space Station. We learn about our new spaceships, the Starliner, the Dragon, or the Orion spaceship. We learn about all of these spaceships.
Yes. NASA kind of likes efficiency, don't they?
Yes, you have to be, right? Like if you don't want to take too much food with you on the spaceship, right? Cause that's extra weight or mass and you don't want to take that with you. It makes it inefficient and the rocket may not get you there. So you take just the right amount of food and just the right amount of water.
Very much built into the whole sort of atmosphere and culture of NASA for sure. I want to switch gears a little bit right now. We've talked a lot about your training at NASA, but you've completed your, initial astronaut training. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And so are you working on a mission right now? Anything specific that you can talk about or share?
Oh, absolutely. I work on a couple different missions. And of course, we don't stop training. You never stop training. You need to keep your proficiency up or your ability. You want to lose skills you've gained. So we keep training. And that's certainly a continuous process. But yes, I'm working on some missions. So right now, I have a couple jobs. One that I really love is I'm a test pilot in the Navy, and that skill translates here because I'm working on the landers that are going to land on the moon. So we're going back to the moon in 2024, and you know, I worked on the flight controls, or how you fly the airplanes, the Navy, to land on the ship, and we redesigned the flight control laws and how the Navy lands on the ship. But now I'm taking that same skill set and translating it to the spacecraft we're going to use to land on the moon.
That's
and to me, that's just so satisfying, right? We're talking about, well, do we put the control stick here? And what do you put on the display? And what do you want to see? And what happens if there's a big crater right there? What do we do? How do we maneuver around the crater? What kind of angles can, you know, what kind of slope, like hills, can we land our spaceship on? What can we design to? What are the landing legs? And, you know, growing up, all of these moon things or Mars things that you looked at were always an artist's conception, you know, concept picture, right? An artist drew a fancy picture of a spaceship and you went, ooh, ah. Mm-hmm. But it's not that anymore. Like, we are looking at, you know, I have touched actual hardware that's going to the moon. I've touched, you know, I've these pieces of hardware that are already at Kennedy Space Center getting ready to launch. I'm on video chat with the engineers going, I like that, or I don't like that. That's terrible. We got to work on that. And he's like, good point. I agree. So you're having conversations with real people, and it's real numbers. It's real things. You can feel it. It's real. We're going back to the moon. It's not a conceptual artist drawing. It's like actual drawings with actual figures. And you go, and sometimes you get off this telecon and you are exhausted and you go, wait a minute, we're going, like, this is the thing
that
we're doing. We're building this thing. We're going back to the moon. right? I mean, how can you not be excited about this? And the best part, I would say, is that, I mean, there's so many good parts. But the best part is the way that we're designing it is that we're going to design it to stay. We're going to make it sustainable so we can stay on the moon. We're building a lunar base. So if you're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years old right now, and you study hard in school and you work hard and you go do some of these things, and it told you you can have any background you want, just work hard at it and be really good at it, you can come join us on the moon. Wow. So as a kid, like, I watched the space shuttle, right? I'm a pilot. I want to fly this thing that looks like wings, but it goes in space and it comes to the atmosphere super fast, but it's gone. Right? Mm-hmm. So it's gone. But what I'm saying is, what's really cool about this is we're building the sustainability so that it continues across for generations, and everyone can come join us on the moon.
That is so amazing. And that is such a good piece of advice for our young listeners, is to, no matter what you do, just try and be the best you can be at it. And space exploration and stuff like that, it's not just all knowing how to fly a spacecraft or doing specific, going to space camp or something like that. Like you said, there are geologists, there are chemists, there are engineers, all sorts of things. So you can really pursue a lot of different types of careers and still get involved in space exploration.
Go do what you're passionate about. I run into folks and they want to kind of copy what other people did to try and become an astronaut. And it's like, you know, like, let's be honest, I'm mostly lucky that I'm here. There is some skill involved to get here, but mostly lucky. I saw and met and worked with the other folks that interviewed, and I'm like, wow, why is that person out here? I mean, they're incredible. It's very much luck. But if you go do what you're passionate about and what you love to do, you'll always be happy. Like, I've always thought to do work that I'm passionate about, because then it doesn't feel like work. I'm just excited to be at work. I'm excited to be at home. You talked about the silver linings. I'm at home now. I have lunch with my kids.
That's right? So nice.
I'm not at work for lunch, right?
What do your kids think about the fact that their dad's an astronaut?
Oh, it's kids, and that are so funny. Most of us, you know, in my class are roughly the same age who have kids. You know, they hang out with the other kids, and for them, it's just like this normal thing, right? Because the other kids they hang out with, all the other parents are all in the same job. They're all astronauts. So it's just this thing.
Yeah.
My youngest is funny. She was 3 last year, and she came home and she's like, oh, Billy's dad's a police officer. Why can't you be somebody cool like a police officer dad? And that's valid. And like, she is exactly right. Mm-hmm. Everybody contributes to our human species on Earth, right? And she's, you know, it's just a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you a little bit more about the mission to the moon. Now, is that the Artemis mission that you're working on, where you're coming up with spacecraft?
Yes.
That'll learn how to land on the moon? So that's supposed
we're going to land them on the moon. They're not learning how to land. We're flying those things.
Right. So that is going to launch in 2024, you said. That is so close. It's not even that far away, and I'm sure you feel that pressure all the time. But when you do that, so how are you getting to the moon? Are you going to make a stop at the International Space Station? Are you going straight there from liftoff? How is that process going to work?
So the architecture, as we would call it, that's, you know, how it's built, what we're going to do. We have a new rocket, brand new rocket, that's being built. It's gigantic. It's huge. It's incredible. I got to go see it being built. I just got to touch it, and that was just kind of cool for me. And it's going to launch. It's got a small capsule on the top. It'll put 4 people. It's going to launch. It's going to go way past. It'll be within about 25 minutes. It'll be well past the International Space Station.
Oh, wow.
And so it's going to go up into this high orbit. It's going to make a lap around Earth to build up speed. You can imagine like shooting yourself way up. Like, you imagine like tossing a rock into the air, right? You know, conceptually, that rock is actually in an orbit around the Earth. It just is not fast enough that it comes back down and hits the Earth. But when you make a lap around Earth, if you go fast enough, you'll actually miss it and swing around the other side. And that's exactly what it's doing. So it'll launch from Earth, go up really high, then come right back at Earth and slingshot around the backside of Earth and go towards the moon. It'll fire its engine into the slingshots around Earth and go launch it off towards the moon. And just, could you imagine that? Just using Earth as a slingshot.
Yeah.
I have a hard time imagining that, but the physics works out. And then you slingshot towards the moon. But before you launched, a couple weeks before you launched, and sometimes a couple months, other rockets launched without people on them. And those rockets are going to build a space station that orbits the moon. Not Earth, orbits the moon. And then another couple rockets are launching, and they're launching a little lander that's going to go connect to that space station that orbits the moon. And those all launched, and those assembled themselves in orbit around the moon. And then the humans launch. We launch, and we go on this little capsule, and we shoot ourselves out towards the moon, and we join up. We get close. It'll take a couple days to get there, but you're going really fast. And you'll join up with this other space station. You'll dock with it. You'll connect to it. You'll crawl through the space station, or float, I should say. And you'll hop in the lander, and you'll go down to the surface of the moon.
Wow.
And you'll spend a couple days on the surface of the moon. Like, I mean, could you imagine, like, opening the door and in your spacesuit, you need to be in a spacesuit, there's no air, and you step down the ladder and stand on the surface of the moon and look around. Like, just close your eyes and think about that. If you don't have goosebumps on, then you're not a human.
Before we go, I want to thank you so much for joining us, but also, do you have any last bit of wisdom for any of our young listeners out there dreaming about a career in space exploration?
Go do what you love to do. Go work hard at it. Give back to this earth and come join us. Come join us.
Come join us. That is awesome. I'm sure they will. Well, thank you so much to NASA astronaut and U.S. Navy commander Matthew Dominick. Matthew, it's been such an honor to have you on the podcast. We'll let you go do your thing.
Awesome. Thank you, sir.
All right. Take care. Wow, what an honor to speak with NASA astronaut Matthew Dominick.
I'm so inspired, I'm ready to fly to space right now.
Speaking of going to space, I meant to mention that Venus, one of our planetary neighbors who's been in the news lately, was kind enough to swing by for a quick chat on this week's edition of Did You Know?
Venus, thanks for joining us this week on Did You Know?
No, thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Hey, did you guys know that I'm the second planet from the sun? You know, first is the worst, second is the best, and all that. And I'm also the closest planet to Earth. Earth and I are hella tight. Did you guys know that I spin really slowly? Like, I'm kind of doing things at my own pace. Like, kind of march to the beat of my own drum, you know what I'm saying? Not only that, but I spin in the opposite direction from most planets, so I'm kind of like a rebel, you know? Like a nonconformist.
Whoa, cool.
Oh, yeah.
I got a thick atmosphere, and it traps heat in a big old greenhouse effect, which essentially makes me the hottest planet in our solar system. I mean, I don't want to brag. I'm just telling it like it is.
No, it's okay. We can tell. You're hot.
My name comes from Venus, as in the ancient Roman goddess of love and beauty. I mean, I can't think of a more appropriate name to come from. Truth.
Venus, us humans, we recently made a really big discovery involving your clouds.
Yeah. No, I've been seeing a lot of that about my phosphine gas. You know, it's true. I'm really glad people are finally noticing, you know, the gases that I got in me, you know? I'm a gassy guy. A lot of my friends say, you know, I'm a gas. So, yeah, I think it'd be a great place to live. I'm hella hot. I'm hella tight with Earth, and I got more volcanoes than anybody in the whole solar system. Like, for the sightseeing alone, people on Earth are always worried about not having enough time, you know? Like, one day on me is 243 days on Earth. I mean, talk about a time warp, man. Where else can you do that? I'm where it's at. Come through.
We'll come through. We will. I mean, Brian, when do you want to go?
I can be there anytime. I mean, we could leave right now.
Yeah. Thanks for talking with us today, Venus.
Thanks so much for having me. No, it's totally cool to be here.
Man, Venus was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, almost unnervingly so.
Hey, Brian, want to chat with another planet?
What? Another one? Of course.
How about the big one with a giant big old red spot?
Wait, you mean Jupiter?
Yeah, it is Jupiter. Hello, Jupiter.
Hi, Jupiter.
Oh, well, hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Jupiter, tell us about yourself.
Oh, Jupiter. What do you want to know about me? Did you know that I am the fifth closest planet to the sun, or the fifth planet furthest away from the sun? It just depends on your point of view. And that's true no matter where we are in our orbit. And come to think of it, do you know how long it takes me to orbit the sun?
5 years.
1,826 days.
Days? Why'd you do it in days? Wait, isn't that 5 years?
Come on.
Oh, that's a good guess. That's a good guess. Nope. 12 years. It takes me 12 years to get around the sun. It is exhausting. Oh, right. Did you further know that I am the largest planet in the solar system, more than twice as large as all of the other planets combined? Oh, also, which of your humans was the first to see me, you know, and identify me as a planet?
Oh my gosh, I should know this.
That's right. Galileo, 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 Galileo. Oh, 1610. What? What took so long? It wasn't like I made it hard for ya. I'm the biggest planet in the solar system. Also, the iconic great red spot on my surface. Now, what is that? Do I need to have it looked at? Nope. Actually, it's a giant storm that's bigger than Earth, and it has been raging for hundreds of years. The weekend forecast, still stormy.
Now that's a space joke. Well, thanks for chatting with us, Jupiter. As the largest planet in our solar system, do you have any words of wisdom for our listeners?
I just want to say that planets are connected. We're separated by so much space, but we're connected by all that space. You can't get rid of me. We're going to stay in this little dance together. Around and around the sun we go, and when it stops, nobody knows. So take good care of yourself on Earth, and maybe you'll make it out to Jupiter someday. We'd love to have you. Not too close. We're not very hospitable, but we'd love to see your faces sticking out of your little astronaut windows. Oh, and I'll tell you what. I'll sing you the song. I will. Now that she's back in the atmosphere with drops of me in her hay. It just keeps getting better, this song. It's about us. It's about our relationship, Earth and Jupiter. This one gets good. Tell me, did you sail across the sun? Did you make it to the Milky Way? We both live in the Milky Way. It's all faded. I'm sure you have the rest of your show to get back to, so I'll leave you now. Jupiter, out.
Wow. I mean, I know that Jupiter is like 4.5 billion years old, but that was a deep cut. That song's like 20 years old.
Do you think we'll ever get to go to Jupiter, Brian?
You mean, will we go there and back again?
Yeah, we'll go there and back again.
I think so. I think so.
You know, Brian, one of the great things about space exploration and astronomy is that there are so many ways to get involved, especially if you're following your passion.
That's right. Especially for our younger audience members out there. Just like Matthew said earlier in the show, do what you love to do and you'll always be happy.
We learned a lot from Matthew, and something he said that really stands out is that even though we all come from different backgrounds, the true story behind us is all of our mentors, our teachers, the folks who enabled us to learn and see things that we never would have seen before. All of the people, family, friends, and teachers that got us to where we are today are the real heroes of today.
That's so true. Yeah, we all stand on the shoulders of those who came before us.
We'd love to hear your stories of inspirational teachers and mentors. Just give your teacher or mentor a shout out on social media and be sure to tag Reach the Podcast.
To learn more about NASA's Artemis program and mission to land on the moon by 2024, check out our show notes or visit nasa.gov.
And for anyone interested in space-inspired at-home creative activities, NASA's Space Place is launching an art challenge. Each month, Space Place readers will get a new drawing prompt from which Space Place will feature select drawings on their website. For more info, visit spaceplace.nasa.gov/art-challenge.
As always, we want to acknowledge that not everyone has access to computers or the internet.
And if you're not able to get online, many local libraries offer publicly available internet access. Thanks for joining us for Reach, a space podcast for kids. We're your hosts, Meredith Stepien
and Brian Holden. This episode of Reach was written by Sandy Marshall with Nate DeFort, Meredith Stepien, and Brian Holden.
Reach is produced by Nate DeFort and Sandy Marshall, who's a solar system ambassador for NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and edited by Nate DeFort.
Our theme song and additional music was composed by Jesse Case.
And our logo was created by Stephen Lyons.
What an honor to speak with NASA astronaut and U.S. Navy Commander Matthew Dominick. On behalf of everyone at Reach, thanks again to Matthew for joining us on the show.
We'd also like to offer thanks to Jennifer Hernandez and everyone at NASA's Public Affairs Office, and to Kay Ferrari at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory.
Venus was voiced by our very own star kid, the incomparable Darren Criss, who you know as Blaine Anderson on the hit television show Glee and on the Quibi series Royalties. We're so glad Darren could join the show. You can find Darren online at Darren Criss.
Jupiter was voiced by the legendary Sean Astin, a.k.a. Samwise Gamgee, from unforgettable movies like The Goonies, Rudy, and of course, the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Find Sean online at Sean Astin. Thank you so much, Sean and Darren. That was so much fun.
And as always, a big Reach hooray to our Reach learning community for the really fun space jokes. Thanks to James and Blythe and Bella, who you can regularly hear on the podcast Unspookable, giving their takes on the origins of urban legends and scary stories.
Do you have a question about space that's been on your mind?
Let us know. Our bi-weekly segment, entitled Reaching Out, is our chance to answer your questions. Tune in to Reaching Out next week to find out how you can be featured in an upcoming episode.
Hey, Brian, did you know that there are more than 170 billion galaxies in the observable universe?
That's a lot of billions.
If you're enjoying Reach, be sure to tell your friends and leave us a rating and review in your podcast player of choice.
Or share an episode on social media.
And if you'd like to find us online, visit at Reach the Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, or on our website at reachthepodcast.com.
Reach is a production of Soundsington Media, committed to making quality programming for young audiences and the young at heart. For more information on our shows and the people behind them, go to SoundsingtonMedia.com. You know, Meredith, we've heard so much about the value of teachers and mentors and learning from each other. One thing I've learned from you is that you can never watch Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again too many times in one weekend.
Hey, and one thing I've learned from you is that Avatar The Last Airbender is just one of the greatest shows ever made. Thank you for introducing me to it.
You're welcome. Well, we look forward to hearing from you, our listener community. Keep asking questions.
And keep looking at the stars.
Have you ever wondered who the Mary was from Bloody Mary? If the Loch Ness Monster was real, or if Ouija boards actually worked? On each episode of the family-friendly Unspookable, we look at the histories and mysteries behind your favorite scary stories, myths, and urban legends to get the real stories behind the scares. Want to solve your next mystery? Find and follow Unspookable now, wherever you get your podcasts.